welcome to episode 56 of Allied Strategies. My name is Tristan. Joining me, as always, are my two lovely co-hosts, Neil.
Hello.
And Ben.
I have come to you now at the turn of the tide.
So today, we are going to talk a little bit about some of the flashback drafts that are going to be on Magic Online for the next month. And then in the next couple episodes, we're going to talk all things Eldritch Moon as the full spoiler comes out and all that happens. But we'll leave that for the next couple episodes. And this week, we're going to kind of try and prepare each other and you for all these formats that you can draft on Magic Online while there's nothing really exciting to do while we wait for Eldritch Moon. But before that, Ben and I went to a tournament last weekend, which was Grand Prix Pittsburgh. That was a standard tournament. So, Ben, how did that tournament go for you?
Well, let's just say that there's a common nickname that Pittsburgh has wherein you change the first consonant sound to a slightly different consonant sound. And that is how the GP went for me.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean by that, but me and Ben both, I guess Ben and I both, lost that tournament about as much as one can lose a tournament. We were both done by the seventh round. We went 3-4, both of us,
yeah,
with
so
our two buys.
I won a single match, yeah.
Yeah, we both won one match and lost four.
And then... Guys, that's really bad. Don't do that.
It was, I mean, to be fair, it's the same as, you know, losing five matches total over the weekend.
Yeah, it is the
either
same.
Either way, right? So it's better, if you're going to have, like, some losses and some wins, it's better to put all your losses in the same time. Which is what Ben and I very effectively did. So then we had a whole weekend in Pittsburgh to enjoy the beautiful inside of the hotel and the convention center, which we did. We played some Code Names. That was the first time I got to play Code Names. I would recommend that game to anybody who hasn't played it that's listening. It's a great, like, word association game, sort of.
I tilted off and bought a box of EMA for
yeah,
us to draft
did.
On Sunday. And then my box was great, so there was some fledgling amount of justice over this weekend.
Wait, did we actually get to draft that box?
Yes.
Oh,
do you
who
not
won?
Remember? Oh, I see. You're
who won that?
Yeah,
that
you,
draft.
I mean, you won the games. But I won the life goal of opening a foil wasteland. So,
but is it true that my team got more match wins than your team?
That is correct.
I have no further questions. Neil, would you like to move on now into Card of the Week with us?
All right, sounds good. I'll just jump right in. I'll go first. And my Card of the Week is Commune with the Gods. It is a nice little Eternal Masters reprint. One in a green for a common. And you reveal the top five cards of your library and take an enchantment or creature card from there and put the rest into your graveyard. It's a sorcery. So... Commune with the Gods is a card that very near and dear to my heart. Originally, I loved this card because it was in the Legacy Cube for a while. And the reason I liked it that it was in the Legacy Cube was you got to play it in green, like, black, blue, like, either Soul Tie or just green-black, like, Reanimator. Because this card finds your animate dead and bids the Gristlebrand or whatever at the same time. And so you kind of can do that actually just in Eternal Masters, too. You commune with the gods, you find your animate dead... You're probably not getting anything insane, necessarily, to reanimate, unless you have, like, an Inkwell Leviathan and you're very lucky. But I like this card because it has a lot of really just cool applications, and I like when there's a lot of cross-synergy built into a card, because this card also turns on Threshold very easily, and also finds your Hondens. And so it's this really cool card that goes in a lot of different decks, and it's fun to see what the card does differently in those different decks. And is actually honestly just pretty good in a lot of them. So, Commune with the Gods definitely was underrated, now being maybe closer to properly rated in Eternal Masters, but definitely take it higher than you might think otherwise. It's a nice linchpin.
Yeah, I think there was a copy or two of this in my teammate Michael Majors during the team draft. He had one in his deck, but his deck was so deep on the Honden strategy. I think he was playing four of the five Hondens and two Gaia's Blessings. And the games he won, which were not very many, but the ones he did win were at the end of the game, he was, like, drawing five cards a turn and casting two Gaia's Blessings and shuffling them all back into his library every time.
Yep.
So really, he was drawing like eight cards a turn.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was something special. Unfortunately, he didn't manage to put together a match win, but his deck was very, very sweet. It also had an Arcanus, so just when you thought enough cards were being drawn, they were. He could really draw like 10 cards a turn. That was a nice deck, and Commune with the Gods is an important part, if I think so. I think there was one of them in there. Ben. If it wasn't in there, then it wasn't an important part. Ben, what's your week?
He also had, I think, Werebear and milling Gaia's Blessing as a little bit of non-bo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah.
Well, Commune with the Gods is good with enchantments, but you know what card is good against enchantments?
What
Dromoka's card? Dromoka's Command.
Discard. Because then they don't have any enchantments to cast.
No, discard would be the correct answer if he said which card. He said what card, so the correct answer is Dromoka's Command.
Okay.
Now, longtime listeners of the podcast will know that we here at Allied Strategies are not a big fan of Dromoka's Command. We think the card is too powerful and it's too good on the play, and it's just really annoying to have exist in Standard because it locks you out of playing all sorts of cool enchantments like Flame Shadow Conjuring and other interesting cards. But I'm bringing it up again today because I read an article today about someone advocating for the banning of Dromoka's Command in Standard, because the last two GPs, Pittsburgh and Taipei, were both like totally dominated by Dromoka's Command. Like, I think 12 or like 13 of the top 16 decks all had four Dromoka's Commands in them. And even down in the top 32, like, Dromoka's Command just had a huge overshowing, like 60% of decks or something had Dromoka's Commands in it, which is absurd. And, like, maybe that's because Green, White, and Bant Company are the best decks, but those decks are the best partly because they can play a bunch of Dromoka's Commands. So, I think that card's really stupid, and I think it's probably not worth it to ban it in Standard. If you ban things in Standard, the card has to be, like, really egregious. I don't know which maybe Dromoka's Command is. It certainly has tournament results to back up its claim to bandom. But, I'm just saying, like, I hate that card, and I can't wait for it to rotate.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah, I'm definitely ready for it to rotate, but I don't think I would ban it if I had the power to.
I don't think any of us would ban it. But I do
think it's pretty close. Like, it's the closest card in Standard right now to where I'd want to ban it, but I don't know. When you think back to the last Standard bannings, which were, like, Stoneforge Mystic and Jace the Mind Sculptor, it doesn't quite reach that stature to me. I mean, the fact that it's good is, but like there are cards that could be an Eldritch Moon that could change the equilibrium, and you just wouldn't see any Dromoka's Commands at the top tables. Possibly, it's been in and out of Standard since it's been printed. Right, we've had those beautiful few months when there was no Dromoka's Commands in Standard. Do you remember that? Back when the game was worth playing and the skies were blue.
The game is still worth playing.
We frolicked through the meadows.
But I am a little tired of Green White Mirrors, so
you could make money at Grand Prix.
You could
show
make
up at Grand Prix and play against different decks.
You could make it to day two or round eight or whatever your personal goal is for how far you could get in the Grand Prix. Yeah, those are the good old days. But another card that comes from the good old days is my card of the week, which is Mother of Runes. So Mother of Runes is a single white mana for a 1/1, and you can tap it to give a creature you control protection from a color of your choice until end of turn.
That doesn't sound that broken, Tristan.
It doesn't sound that broken, Neil. You're correct. But in fact, it is that broken. It is the most brokenest. And I was reminded of this when I saw a picture you tweeted of a fourth pick Mother of Runes going into your deck. And I was just thinking, you know, this means there's probably room for a public service announcement about the strength of this card. So the problem with this card is that once it's in play, After you get to untap with it, it basically is going to require two removal spells to kill anything on their side, right? Which is very difficult to muster in a limited deck, let alone a constructed deck. And if they then have protection on top of that, you get, you know, 3-for-1 or something like that, and you never ever have hope of killing it anymore. So the play pattern is, like, you play this on turn one, and if they don't immediately kill it, then the game is very, very difficult to lose. And a way to see this is, like, the card Benevolent Bodyguard is playable, and that gets to do Mother of Runes' thing once, and it's, like, quite good, right? in the decks that want that. It's quite a powerful effect. Now, Mother of Runes gets to do that every turn. It basically turns off their removal until they draw a second copy. And it's not even hurt by Coalition Honor Guard, which is something I learned when I had Coalition Honor Guard and Ben had Mother of Runes in the team draft that I won against Ben in. And that, like, I was, like, hoping briefly before I read the card to make sure that I would be able to make it so he had to target my guy and if I could effectively turn off Mother of Runes, but that doesn't even work. So that is sad.
I don't know.
And
I don't know, though. Ben, I could have targeted your guy to give him protection from green and then played my Armadillo Cloak.
Wow, that would have been a cool interaction, yeah. But unfortunately, that is not legal, so it didn't happen. Did you have an Armadillo Cloak, one of those games where I had an Honor Guard?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah. Is green-white aura's not very good?
Yeah, it wasn't. I got like a fourth pick Glare of Subdual, so I kind of moved in, and I wasn't intending to be like an auras deck, but then it just sort of happened.
Coalition Honor Guard is nice versus Glare of Subdual.
Oh, man.
Also true.
That is absurd.
Yeah, it's the only way to beat it, basically, in any main deck. But
man, I wish I could just keep choosing Coalition Honor Guard as my card of the week. That card is just, it continually excites.
So good.
it like every game you learn something new that it just completely destroys.
It just is unbeatable. I don't know why people pass it.
So I'm changing my card of the week. It's not. It's going to be Coalition Honor Guard. I'm sorry, everybody.
Which is a great combo with Mother of Runes, by the way.
That's true. Yes, I had that on in a Magic Online deck. That
they're just like, what do I
easily.
Do? Like, I can't do anything. And then also they're like,
Ben, go ahead.
No. Neil, finish your thought.
My little thought was Mother of Runes and Coalition Honor Guard. Your opponent's just like, what do? I can't do anything. And then they're like, well, you know, they only have Mother Runes and an Honor Guard, so, like, they're not really attacking me, so this is probably fine. And then, like, 10 turns later, they're like, God, I was losing 10 turns ago. There was nothing I could do.
what they've got to do is they have to have, like, two pieces of removal of the same color, right? Because then you target the Honor Guard gets protection, and then you can target the Mother of Runes, right? Because the Honor Guard's no longer a legal target.
Yeah.
I mean, or you could just have two pieces of different colored removal wherein
but then you kill the Honor Guard
honor
instead
guard.
Of the,
and then you,
the Mother
you have
of
to
Runes.
Go all over the Mother. Basically, yeah, it's just great.
Once the Honor Guard is down, then you can start Glare of Subduing the Mother of Runes. So.
Yes, if you have a Glare of Subdual in play, then anything is going to work.
Yeah.
I saw a nice one in Neil's stream where he just completely destroyed his opponent's protection abilities because he had Honden of Life's Web in play, and that makes colorless spirits.
Yep.
That was very, very fun to watch.
I also had Goblin Trenches with Glare of Subdual, so.
Ooh.
If you don't know how that works,
Neil.
Works out okay.
That's a combination.
Also, my deck had 3 Commune with the Gods, and Glare of Subdual, Goblin Trenches, and 4 different colored Hondans, so.
It's one of the sweetest decks I've ever seen.
Oh, it was amazing. Great. And then I double queued, and then I timed out.
So. Neil, that is not a combination.
Yeah, well, whatever. It was in the sake of entertainment. I felt really stupid after, so.
All right. Then here quickly on to achievements. Neil, we have a listener achievement to report, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Correct. I was tweeted by @Fluey, who asked, can I get the present sight achievement for having a future sight and Jace the Mind Sculptor in play at the same time? I thought long and hard about this, aka about 10 seconds, and I thought, that fit the flavor of the present site achievement. So, absolutely. Well done, @Fluey, because the original present site achievement was with
Senseis, yeah.
But Jason Mind Sculptor is completely, completely busted with Future Sight, too, so that's sweet.
Yeah, I agree. I think that resolves as well. Did either of you guys manage to earn any of these achievements since last week?
Oh, wait, no. I combined Brainstorm with Squadron Hawk. In fact, I kind of unlocked a nice achievement. It's like a sad achievement where I played a deck with 1 Squadron Hawk.
So, yeah, I'm in to count that as an achievement.
Okay, check it out.
I second picked Squadron Hawk in the draft. I did not pick another one because I didn't see any. My deck had 2 Brainstorms and 2 Flying Lords. So I was like, well,
Check it out, though.
Guess we're playing Squadronhawk.
Did you have any White Mane Lions?
No, maybe.
Because you can go Squadronhawk, White Mane Lion, Brainstorm, draw a card.
Yeah, that is gas. No, I don't know that I had any, but that's nice.
That's the next achievement.
All right.
For anybody to earn. I didn't earn any either. I almost got Give a Vanishing Creature Haste. I almost achieved it in this team draft, but unfortunately I had Reckless Charge, and the only Vanishing Creature I had in play was Calcederm, so that did not work. It was very sad.
I was also reminded that Maelstrom Wanderer is a nice way to get the Time Walk achievement, too, with Calcederm.
Oh, yeah. That's strong.
And you can Cascade into Cascade, right? You could just... Well, there's no Cascade that can Cascade into Calcederm, but you could maybe just Cascade. I don't know. Whatever.
Whatever. It's cool. Anyways, moving on into our main topic this week, we are going to discuss the next three flashback formats that are going to be on Magic Online. I guess the first one has just come out right now, right?
Yep. This Wednesday today.
That is Shards of Alara. Three copies of that. Three booster packs of that. And then 1 week from the release of this podcast, a pack of Conflux will be added. And will that pack be added to the end of the draft? Will it be Alara, yeah. Conflux?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay, so it's still the old way of...
The wacky old backwards world.
Yep, and then 1 week after that, a pack of Alara Reborn will replace a pack of Shards of Alara.
Yep.
And then after that, there will be other ones, but that's going to be the scope of this episode, is we're going to talk about the three different types of Shards of Alara draft. Now... Neil, you're going to have to do quite a bit of the heavy lifting this episode, because I've never done any of these draft formats before in my life. So, in fact, this will help me, because I'll know what questions to ask as somebody who hasn't done these and might want to.
And listeners, make sure you definitely let us know what you think about this episode, because this is a nice little, like, filling the gaps kind of thing between a lot happening. So it's fun to kind of look at the next month or two on Magic Online and kind of do it all at one episode. So if you like it, let us know. If you hate it, also let us know.
Great, yes. So, first one's going to be Shards of Alara. What should I know about Shards of Alara going into that format, Neil? What's the, like, if you had to tell, like, people one or two sentences, what would those be for Shards of Alara?
All right, so if you've played Khans of Tarkir, that was all about wedges, and you pretty much wanted to play a wedge pretty much every single time. Shards of Alara... Triple Shards of Alara is pretty similar. You want to basically just play a shard, which instead of a wedge across, is just three connected colors. So you have, like, Grixis is blue, black, red, and Naya's red, green, white. So three allied colors in a row, all centered on the middle one. So, like, Naya is in base green, and it uses red and white to kind of help augment that. And every single one of these shards has some sort of connected theme that ties it together. And often is very, very focused on that theme. So why don't we kind of just go through the shards and talk about what you're trying to prioritize and how the set sort of functions from there, I think. That would be
great.
Fun.
So let's start off with the one that's centered around white, which is the Shard of Bant. So Bant is white, green, and blue.
Yep.
What is a Bant deck trying to do, Neil, and what's its mechanic?
So the first thing Bant is trying to do is not be drafted, because it is by far the worst... of the five in triple shards. Your, like, payoff card is, like, in common, is one green, one blue, one white, and two mana for a 2/4 flying exalted creature, which, when compared to a lot of the other, like, busted common tricolored cards, doesn't really compare. But Bant is all about exalted. So you start kind of putting some creatures into play, and as long as you have enough ways to not die, your one creature that's attacking every single turn with Exalted is going to be enormous and is going to get the job done. Often the problem with the deck, though, is if you're really all in on that plan, your opponent will just have singular better threats as they're attacking you. And so it's a little bit hard to play defense well enough to be able to really chip through with Exalted. And there's a lot of... embarrassing commons that are, like, you know, 4 mana, 2/2 exalted. Like, that's just not a card that you can realistically cast. So if you're playing Bant, it's important to make sure that you have enough of those, like, payoff cards, because the 2/4 flyer that I was just mentioning is definitely a payoff card, and if Bant is open, then you can sort of go that route. But I think if you want to play Bant, the better way to do it is you kind of just want to play green white, and then you just splash blue a little bit. And the reason for that is green white is this very, very aggressive shell, and there are things like Sigil Blessing, which is an awesome pump spell we saw from Modern Masters. There's Steward of Valoran, which is a bear that taps for mana but has vigilance. And so there's a lot of good green-white cards, and you can sort of just splash blue for a little bit more exalted so that you're attacking early with your green-white, and then once your opponent tries to stabilize, now that they're behind enough, you can take advantage of that exalted. Or you also get some, in addition, you get some evasion maybe because you're adding blue, so that can also help you win. So that's the way I would take Bant. But I would try to avoid it because I think the other ones are much better. But obviously, the open archetype is the open archetype. So if you have to draft Bant, you definitely can win with it. Know the limitations, though. Ben, you were saying you played the set a little bit, but...
It's been a long, long, long time since I've played.
This is my recollection of the set. Like, I actually haven't done any of the flashback drafts yet, so my memory of, like, I'm like, was there, like, a good bounce spell to splash in blue? I don't actually remember, like, that at all.
Isn't there a Resounding Wave?
Yeah, that card's horrible. Oh, there is Resounding Silence, though, and that card's very, very good. So the whole Resounding Cycle...
4 mana normally?
Yeah, it's basically Neck Snap for 4 mana, right? But only on attackers. So for 4 mana, you can exile an attacking creature. It's an instant in white. But you can cycle it for 5, a green, a white, and a blue. And when you cycle it, you can exile 2 attacking creatures. So that's literally a 3-for-1 for 8 mana. But the format can sometimes clog down. And then if your opponent starts going wide to try to beat all your exalted plan, then you just get them with the Resounding Cycle. So once your opponent gets to 8 mana, that's sort of the critical number for all those Resounding Cycles. So definitely keep your eye on that. And that can be a key pivoting point of the draft. One other thing in terms of talking about big mana as well, there's a cycle in the set that are called Obelisks. There are 3-mana artifacts that tap for any color of mana within that shard. So there's like Obelisk of Bant taps for any of the Bant colors. They're basically just banners you can't really do anything else with. They just tap for mana. So
we know how much Mia loves a banner.
Sorry, not banners. Banners. It's well, whatever. Yeah.
It is like banners that don't draw a card, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's where I was going with it. So banners that don't draw cards, not very good. Whereas I think banners were reasonable in cons in the right deck.
So that brings us to a question of the mana. Like, how is the mana in this format, and what kind of fixing is there available if we're trying to play 3 colors?
So the answer is the mana's bad. They hadn't quite figured out.
Yep.
Tilt.
They hadn't figured out how to make 3-color sets yet. This is sort of their second attempt, I think, after Invasion, basically, which was where they just threw all the colors of the wind onto the page and saw what happened. And so because of that, there is some mana fixing, but if you can get 2 main colors and splash a third, that's certainly the best. The problem is that the power level is definitely concentrated among the 3-color cards. Like, there's a card called Woolly Thoctar in the set. Costs 1 red, 1 green, and 1 white. So 3 mana for a 5/4. So that's it. You just cast Woolly Thoctar on turn 3, and it's bigger than everything else your opponent can do, and your opponent's probably just dead most of the time. So if you can have the mana fixing, then those 3-color cards are really, really going to pay you off. But it often takes a while to get that going, because one of the main mana fixers are the panoramas. So what a panorama does, it's a colorless land that taps for colorless, but you can make 2 and tap and sacrifice it, just like Warped Landscape. I think it's 2 and tap. Let me make sure it's not 1 and tap.
It's 1 and tap.
Okay, 1 and tap. Yeah, that makes it way better. I was thinking 2 and tap sounded wrong. Okay, 1 tap and sacrifice it to search your deck for a land within that shard. So the Bant panorama, you can pay 1 tap, sacrifice it for a forest, plains, or island. Put that onto the battlefield tapped. So that is one of the better fixers that you can have access to. And we're not at Conflux yet. Conflux adds a whole new dimension of mana fixing when I think pretty much Wizards realize they kind of screwed up the first set. But we're not at Conflux yet. So besides panoramas, let me just
There's also the uncommon cycle of like Arcane Sanctum and
those are insane. You basically want to first pick those.
Yeah, those are first picks.
Mana is so bad that if you can get a tri-land, your mana is going to be good, and you can cast the Woolly Factor, and then you can win later on. So that is Bant, and that's when the mana fixing. What I'm going to do right now, while you guys discuss, let me grab Gatherer real quick, so just so I have this in front of me.
Oh yeah, way ahead of you. Gatherer is a podcaster's best friend in times like these. So the next shard we're going to talk about, I guess, will be Esper, since we're going to move around in Wooburg order like civilized people do. Ben, that's a jab at you for your refusal to use Wooburg order at all times. So Esper is white, blue, and black. And its mechanic is basically artifacts, right? Colored artifacts and just artifacty matters in general. I don't think there is actually a keyword mechanic in Esper. There's just a bunch of artifact cards and artifact matter cards. So, Neil, how do you draft the Esper strategy?
So the Esper strategy is kind of just all about collecting value. There's a few key cards that you're looking out for. I would say if I had to define Esper as a card, it would be Sanctum Gargoyle. That card is 3 and a white for a 2/3 flyer, and when it comes into play, you get to return target artifact card from your graveyard to your hand. So you can trade off an artifact early on, and you play the Gargoyle, you get that artifact back, because it's a flying Gravedigger, which is incredibly powerful, and it also doesn't have to be a creature, it could just be, you know, an artifact for value. And if you happen to get multiple Sanctum Gargoyles, you can just start looping those, and they're just flying Gravediggers, and that's just fantastic. But that sort of emphasizes what you're trying to do with the archetype, because like you said, it's just artifact matters card. So you're just trying to collect as many of those as possible. There's another one here, which is called Metallurgeon, which costs 1 and a white for a 1/2. You pay a white, tap it, regenerate target artifact. So that is sort of like a really, really, really bad Mother of Runes kind of thing, where we were just talking about how annoying Mother of Runes is. Well, this just sits in play, and you're going to just basically come out on top of Cobbett every single time, because as long as you have this up, your opponent can't really kill anything unless they can exile it. So you're just looking to be as synergistic as possible and get as many artifacts as possible. But the deck can function kind of anywhere from an aggro to a control deck, although it's usually not super aggressive. It's not definitely not the most aggressive of the shards. In fact, it's probably like 4th out of 5 in terms of aggression. So more like a mid-ranger control deck usually. And so it's flyers, value, artifacts. Executioner's Capsule is a card you're definitely looking for. We've seen that in Modern Masters as well. And here it's a common. So you have Executioner's Capsule with Sanctum Gargoyle. That's a nice little wombo combo.
Wow, that's insane.
So that's kind of what you're looking to do. Oh, another card that I just want to call out that looks kind of bad, but it's kind of insane, is Puppet Conjurer. It costs 1 and a black, so 2 mana for a 1/2. You pay a blue and tap it, and you put a 0/1 Homunculus into play. And then at the beginning of your upkeep, you sacrifice a Homunculus. So this sounds kind of bad. Like, why would you want to do that? Well, it makes a stream of chump blockers for one. So that's pretty nice, because a lot of these decks are just attacking on the ground. And I was mentioning the Exalted deck from Bant, they can only attack with one creature. So, like, this card can single-handedly just hose one of the 5 shards, if admittedly the worst, as long as they don't have a flyer. But also what it can do is it can combo nicely with, like, sacrifice effects, like Scavenger Drake, which we've seen in Modern Masters 2. So that starts getting an extra counter every single turn. And there's also Devour cards, which is a Jund mechanic, that you can sacrifice any number of creatures to get that many added counters as that creature comes into play. So I think Puppet Conjurer is a card people will definitely underrate going into the format. Like Fleshbag Marauder also is a good example of things to combo with that. So kind of just look for synergy amongst artifacts and make sure that you can just survive to the mid to late game, because then you're going to take over the game with flyers. A good example of a good flyer is just Tower Gargoyle, which is the marquee card of Esper. It's just the shard colors and 1 mana, so 4 total, for a 4/4 flyer. That's all it does. It's at uncommon.
It's an artifact.
Yeah, it's definitely an artifact, and it definitely rules the roost. 4/4 flyer is absolutely enormous. No one can really get through that. And I guess if I'm going to mention one more thing about this shard, it's that I think this is one of the couple Resounding Cycles cards that actually kind of sucks. This one is the one that for 3 mana bounces something. 8 mana you can double bounce when you cycle. I don't like this card very much. I don't think you should really play it. So that's my analysis there.
How, like, if you had to put Esper, you've got Bant at the bottom of the totem pole. Where do you think Esper ranks as compared to the other shards?
I think Esper is either 2 or 3, in my opinion.
Okay, cool. How about you, Ben? Have you played enough of the format to have an opinion about the value of Esper?
When I played a long time ago, I remember really liking Esper, but I confess I don't remember it that well. Sanctum Gargoyle is just my jam. I just love looping that guy. Sanctum Gargoyle, get back another Sanctum Gargoyle.
The dream. What more does a man want?
Okay, so the next shard that one can draft is Grixis. Grixis is blue, black, and red, and the mechanic that is in the Grixis colors is Unearth. So to unearth a card, you pay the Unearth cost, and then you return it from the graveyard to the battlefield. It gains haste, and then it dies, or it gets exiled at the end of the turn, or if it would leave the battlefield in some manner. And you can only unearth at sorcery speed as well. So, Neil, how good is Grixis, and what's the deck trying to do?
All right, so Grixis is actually pretty good, but Grixis is not at all advertised by Unearth, because Unearth is a little bit of an upside you get on some of these creatures, and there are a few good, really good, like, Unearth creatures that can sort of warp a game, but it's not really a plan in itself. I think the best, like, example of Unearth goes on Scourge Devil. This is a 5-mana 3/3, and when it comes into play, creatures you control get +1/+0. And then you can unearth it, of course. And unearth, you know, gives haste, so it's coming into play, it's pumping itself and the whole team, and you just get in for a ton of damage with this card.
Basically rally the peasants on a stick.
Exactly. So that's pretty cool. But, I mean, there's a lot of other ones where it's just like, you've got a hill giant, you can unearth it, you get a little bit of value. I wouldn't go crazy with unearth because that's, quote-unquote, the mechanic. But what I think of Grixis, I think of, like, a sort of a controlling strategy where you have a lot of removal, because these colors tend to just have that. But the main reason I would actually want to get into this color combination is that it has a stupid number of pinging creatures. Okay? So at common, you have Vithian Stinger, which is a 3-mana prodigal sorcerer with Unearth. So that's already pretty good at common. So that's one creature that can ping. At uncommon, you have a black-red creature that I think it's called Blood Cultist? Yeah, Blood Cultist. So it's another 3-mana pinger that deals a damage with the upside of when that creature would die, it gets a counter as well. So a trick you can do with Blood Cultist is if you have a creature in combat that you're just chumping with, make sure to ping your creature so that Blood Cultist can grow. That's kind of something cool. And then the last one actually is quote-unquote an Esper card. But it's the Esper Guildmage. An Esper Battlemage. So there's these cycle of Battlemages where they're their color and then they have activated abilities on either side. So Esper Battlemage is a 3-mana 2/2 for 2 and a blue. And you can pay a white and white and tap to prevent the next 2 that we dealt to you this turn. More importantly, you can pay a black and tap. Target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. So basically, you just take the Esper Battlemage in Grixis, and you just tag team it with the Vithian Stinger, and you tag team it with the Blood Cultist, and sometimes you even have like Fate Stitcher, which can untap them. And so the plan is to just have this really, really annoying deck that just like mows things down, has removal. And actually, I think the Grixis shard common creature is quite good. What is its name?
Cataract Keeper,
yeah. So it's a blue, black, and red for a 2/3 death touch that has to be blocked by 2 or more creatures. And so it's just really great on defense early on. But you know how I was mentioning the mana is pretty bad in the format. Well, Cataract Creeper is still just going to be great on turn 10, and it's just extremely hard to block. So if you have all these pinging creatures in play, slowly but surely, you're going to tick over the board, maybe chip in a little bit of damage, and then your opponents start to get a little bit low. That's when you unearth a bunch of things, attack with a Cataract Creeper as well, and your opponent can't ignore it all. Maybe they have to double lock the Creeper, and then they're very sad. So that's sort of how Grixis works. You guys have any questions about that?
No, that sounds pretty complete summary of the strategy. How good do you think Grixis is?
So I was mentioning in terms of like Esper 2 or 3, I think Grixis, I think it's either 2 or 3 also. I think now that I mentioned all this, I think probably Esper is number 2 and Grixis is 3.
Okay. So that leaves two more shards, one of which will be number 1 and one of which will be number 4. Let's go to Jund next. Jund being black, red, and green. What is Jund trying to do, Neil?
Jund is trying to cast Resounding Thunder, but more specifically cycle Resounding Thunder.
Tristan, you didn't tell us what the Jund mechanic is.
The Jund mechanic is Devour. So Devour says, when this thing comes into play, first off, Devour is followed by a number, which is important. And Devour says, when this comes into play, you can sacrifice, as it comes into play rather, you can sacrifice any number of creatures, and then it comes into play with that many +1/+1 counters on it, times the number after Devour. So something with Devour 1, if you sacrifice 2 creatures, you'll get 2 counters. Whereas if something has Devour 7, if you sacrifice 2 creatures, you'll get 14 counters. And that is how Devour works. So back to you, Neil.
All right, so again, I think Devour, it's not an entire sham. You definitely want to play creatures with Devour if your deck is kind of making tokens or small creatures that you want to eat. But it's, I think, still kind of a sub-theme of the archetype. One nice thing about Devour in Jund is you do have the whole cycle of Scavenger Drake. So you have Scavenger Drake, which is the Modern Masters creature we saw with flying that gains counters. You have Rockslide Elemental, which is a 3-mana 1/1 first strike. Whenever a creature dies, it gets a 1/1 counter. And our good friend Algae Gharial, also from Modern Masters. The truth, it's back. Well, back where it was originally. So those are really, really nice, and they combo nice with Devour because you're kind of eating these creatures. You can prioritize Devour or not, depending on how good the Devour creatures you are. For example, there's this card called Thunder Thresh Elder, which is 2 and a red for a 1/1 with Devour 3. So you would never, ever pay 3 mana for a 1/1. That's just a horrible rate. But you would pay 3 mana for a 7/7 if you're sacrificing 2 Elvish Visionaries, for example. So it's like, you know, you kind of get a little bit of value here or there, and then you just, your eggs are in a basket. But the problem is exactly that, where all your eggs are in a basket, and there is a reasonable amount of removal in the set. So if you're not careful and you devour way too many things, you're just asking to get punished. So when I was starting this whole little spiel about Jund, the main reason to get into Jund is honestly just Resounding Thunder. Resounding Thunder is just 3 mana, 3 damage instant. And when you cycle it for 5 black, red, and green, it gets to deal 6 damage instead. So because this is a triple set right now with Shards of Alara, it's not uncommon for someone to get 8 mana and they go, end of turn, cycle Resounding Thunder, deal you 6. Untap, cycle another Resounding Thunder, deal you 6. And suddenly your opponent's just taking 12 damage, and usually that's going to be game. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Or maybe you just kill 2 6/6s and attack for millions of damage. Resounding Thunder is absolutely bonkers. Definitely first pickable and a reason to be in these colors of Jund. And then the last card I want to sort of make a note of is Hissing Iguana, which is a 3-mana 3/1 for 2 and a red.
Yeah, that's great.
It's whenever another creature is put in a graveyard from play, you may have Hissing Iguana deal 1 damage to target player. So this card is incredibly annoying. It doesn't look that annoying, but you're making all these little 1/1s, you're devouring creatures, creature combat happens and creatures die. Hissing Iguana can deal, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 damage even in a single combat. And if it trades with a creature, it counts that other creature dying at the same time as itself, so it's at least going to deal 1 damage when it trades with something. So that card's much better than it looks on the surface. I would highly recommend picking that if you're in a Jund strategy. But Jund, again, kind of like Grixis, definitely more about the removal than anything else.
Cool. Neil, have you considered opening Broodmate Dragon as that card's being great. A reason to be in Jund?
Yes. I mean, obviously there's nuances to everything. If you have a broken rare, you should take it. I will also mention that there are just a bunch of, like, some pretty busted commons and uncommons as well, just generally speaking. Necrogenesis is absurd. We've seen that one.
That's not until...
No, it's in the set, yeah. Okay. Necrogenesis is great. Branching Bolt is 1 red and green for an instant. Choose one or both. It deals 3 damage to target creature with flying and 1 without flying. So Branching Bolt is just a giant game. And note that it can go in either Naya or Jund. I mean, there's just a bunch of pretty insane cards. So basically you're playing Jund for like individual rate more than going crazy. I mean, Sprouting Thrinax, talk about a card that's stupid. That card dominated Standard. So
is Jund
Broodmate Dragon dominated Standard, which I find very funny because I feel like nowadays Broodmate Dragon would just not make the cut.
I think it'd still be pretty good. I don't know, but I see what you're saying.
Is Jund the best strategy, or is it the fourth best?
I think it's probably the fourth best, or maybe Grixis is the fourth best, and this is the third best. It's in that realm though, because I think it relies a lot on the good uncommons and more on singularly good cards and like Resounding Thunder than the strategy as a whole.
So that leaves the best for last then,
yep.
Which is Naya. Naya is white, green, and red. And it doesn't have a mechanic either, although it doesn't have a keyword mechanic. It does have a non-keyword mechanic, which is caring about creatures with power 5 or greater. But there is no keyword, so.
The keyword is 5/4, no text. Woolly Thopter is just so stupid. Red, green, and white for 5/4, as I was mentioning. Keying off of having 5 or more power, it's not that hard to do. At one point on Magic Online, Mastodon was my most owned card when I was drafting this set. Mastodon's a 5/3 for 4 and a green. You can pay 1 to give target creature with 5 or more power trample until end of turn. So you just like you have all these 5 power creatures in play, and you just turn them all sideways. You give them all trample, and obviously your opponent can't live. So this chart is just about going basically as big as you can, as fast as you can. I mean, you get just a bunch of wild Nacatls at common. And if you can pick up some of the Naya Panoramas, and you happen to just, if you're just able to curve out and have a 3/3 for 1 mana, I mean, that's just broken. So, again, I think that you kind of want to focus on being in green-white and usually splashing red, because a lot of the strength comes from the green and white as just having those really, really strong creatures. Because you don't really care about the red removal quite as much. Again, just trying to get Mastodons and very, very large creatures in play. One super good card in this archetype is the Rake Claw Gargantua. It's 2 and a red, green, white for a 5/3. You can pay 1 to give target creature with power 5 or greater first strike until end of turn. So this lets you basically never lose combat. And your opponent's just going to have to block at some point because you just have this 5/3. And how do they beat a 5/3 first striking creature? Not to mention it also pumps up all your other creatures that are really large. But I think also the reason that Naya is number one is it's just pretty consistent. It just has all these good, cheap creatures in green and white, as I was saying, and obviously some red creatures as well. It's the only deck I've ever gotten turned forward by in Limited.
How did that happen?
So my opponent went turn 1, Wild Nacatl, turn 2, Steward of Alaron, which makes a mana has vigilance, as I was mentioning. Turn 3, attack with both, Steward of Alaron, Steward of Alaron. I played a turn 3 Woolly Thokdar. And then I blocked, and my opponent played Double Sigil Blessing. So I just died on turn 4 with a turn 3 Woolly Thokdar. So capable of pretty busted starts. I should go through really quickly. There's a few uncommons. There are these ones that key off you having a creature with power 5 or greater and having some effect at the end of turn. So there's a white one for white and 2, a 1/1 that adds a mana to your mana pool if you tap it. And you gain 2 life at the end of every, or at the end of your turn if you have a creature with 5 power or more. I don't think this card is that great unless you have a bunch of 5 drops that you want to ramp from 3 to 5 with. Similarly, there's Exuberant Firestoker, which does the same thing in red, except that it deals 2 instead of it gains you 2. But there's the third one, which is called Drum Hunter, I believe is its name. It costs 1 more mana, so green and 3, and it taps for a mana. But at the end of your turn, if you control a creature with 5 or more power, you get to draw a card, which is obviously a giant game. That card's absurd. So definitely recommend going in on Drum Hunters and trying to get creatures with 5 or more power. But you're kind of just going to have bigger creatures than everyone else. And the format isn't super punishing because everyone's trying to develop their mana. And you can be the one to actually punish, which is nice because this deck actually has like lean aggression. The other ones kind of are lacking that a little bit while they're just trying to set up their mana. And then later in the game, you just have huge monsters that no one can really stop. So that's why I put Naya at number one. But again, I think you want to kind of focus on what your deck is trying to do within a shard. And you kind of want to start branching out in different colors much more. You can do it a little bit here, but the mana is pretty bad, or even in three colors. Wait for Conflux to really start to do that.
Okay, so quickly before we move on to Conflux, though, one of the things about cons is that there were a couple of two-color strategies you could play as well, mm-hmm. Like Black-White Warriors or Red-White Token-y Trumpet Blast-y stuff, or Green-Blue Bear Punch, Green-Red Bear Punch, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Are there any viable two-color strategies in Shards of Alara, or is the strength of the three-color cards enough to make it so that you're always going to be playing at least three colors, maybe two with a splash?
Yeah, I mean, the three-color cards are really, really good, and there's a lot of them, so you're usually not going to be playing solely two colors. I have seen, like, some decks that are much more focused on two colors with a very, very light splash. Like I said, I think green-white is the most likely, because I think the green and white cards are cheap enough that you can actually build an aggro deck to go underneath. Red-green can kind of do that to some extent, too, but you get so paid off by having access to all three colors and of a shard in some amount. And also, you often don't get access to the enemy color gold cards like Necrogenesis if you're not playing all three colors. So it's a pretty good idea to often try to do that. Or like Bull Ceridon. It's a 4 red and a white for a 5/5 Vigilance Haste.
I hadn't even noticed there were enemy color cards in this set. I just assumed they'd do the same thing that they did in cons, where it was only allied colored two-color cards in Khanza Tarkir.
No, so you get enemy-colored cards in this set, which really incentivize you to have a
to
full...
To play three colors, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, each enemy-color thing only goes in one shard, though, so that's...
Yep, exactly.
Oh, and I guess what I said earlier, I meant that there are only enemy-colored cards in Khanza Tarkir, of course, because that was wedges, not shards.
Right, it's the... Exactly. It would be the reverse.
The converse is not true here, right? So that's...
This has both. I mean, there are some allied-colored cards, too. But some of them really aren't that special.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay, so that's Shards of Alara. Ben, do you have anything you want to know from Neil, or anything you remember about the format that you wanted to bring up before we move on to Conflux?
The main thing I remember about the format is getting mana screwed and losing. So I don't really like this format very much, but...
Okay. All right, then, let's move on to... Let's add a pack of Conflux into the mix. So, Neil, what does Conflux do to this draft format?
So, as I was mentioning just a few minutes ago, Conflux essentially it opens up five color, and in fact, I think when Conflux gets out of the mix, you pretty much should almost exclusively draft five color. And the reason for that is that the fixing just gets way, way better, and there's a bunch of five color fixing and some payoffs. And so if you look at a card like Armillary Sphere, it's a 2-mana artifact that you can pay 2, tap it, and sacrifice it. And then you can get any 2 basic lands from your deck into your hand. Suddenly you're just going from being super mana screwed, as Ben was saying, to now having whatever 2 colors you need. And sometimes you just have like your base shard or whatever, and you crack your Armillary Sphere, and now you're just up to 5 colors. So the reason that's good is there's some 5-color payoff cards within that set. A very simple one is just Fusion Elemental. That one costs 1 of every color for a creature. That's just an 8/8. So, as you can see, 8/8s are very, very large. I was talking about Woolly Thokdar and that ruling the roost. Well, an 8/8's a little bit bigger than a 5/4. Obviously, it costs 5 mana, but, you know, you get pretty paid for having that 8/8. And also, it doesn't die to anything like Executioner's Capsule. It's pretty hard to kill with burn spells, so that card is just, you know, pretty good. Additionally, there's basic land cyclers in Conflux, which is nice. So you have like Absorb This in black, which can drain someone for 4, or you can basically land cycle it for any land. So When you're doing that, you can start to get to five colors. Also, added with the set is Domain. So a pretty good card with Conflux is Aven Trailblazer. So this is a nice payoff card. It costs a white and two for a two-star flyer, and star is equal to your domain. So if you're just in a shard and you have one of each basic in your shard, this is a 3-mana 2/3 flyer, which is, hey, that's a pretty decent rate, and you would play that card pretty much every single time. But if you're playing five colors, this is a 3-mana 2/5 flyer, and how's anyone supposed to attack through a 2/5 flyer? And a 2/5 flyer happens to also attack very well, you know, by itself. I mean, this card can block Tower Gargoyle when it's fully pumped up. So domaining has some real implications. Not to mention, the fact that the mana fixing gets better allows you to just kind of go out of your way to pick absurd bombs within shards much more freely. So you're picking up mana fixing, and you happen to be in Bant, but then you open up Flame Blast Dragon in Pack 2. Well, Flame Blast Dragon is a really, really stupid rare that flies over and fireballs things every single turn. So obviously you want to take that, and you're like, wow, my mana fixing really is not going to be very great. And that would be true, except the Conflux adds a whole lot more. And there's also just a ton of busted bombs in Conflux as well. I'm just looking through here, and there's like Wall of Reverence, which is a giant flying wall that gains you infinite life, essentially. Scepter of Dominance is just...
What's that, Ben?
I played Wall of Reverence and Constructed. It was great.
Yeah, that card is great. There's Scepter of Dominance, which is one white-white. You pay white and tap it to tap target permanent. There's Martial Coup. There's Aether Sworn Adjudicator, which terminates something every single turn. I mean, all these cards are just absurd. And
wait, so Neil, there's only one pack of Conflux, though, right? Does the mana fixing really improve that much just by a single pack?
I think it does. You get a lot of, like I said, there's all these basic land cyclers. You basically should never, ever pass Armillary Sphere if that's something you're trying to do. But also you get huge payoffs in the uncommon cycle, which is Fleshformer, and then there's a Red Knight and a White Knight that all have activated, like Dragon Soul Knight, which we saw in Modern Masters, is a huge payoff card. It's an uncommon. 3-mana, 2/2 first strike, but if you pay one color of each mana, it gets +5/+3 and gains flying and trample until end of turn. The white one's the best one. Let me grab that. So the white one costs 2 and a white for a 2/2 first strike. It's called Paragon of the Misha. You pay one of each color, and it gets +3/+3 flying and lifelink. So it actually just turns into Baneslayer Angel.
Baneslayer
Angel. Yeah, it's
take that, Blaine.
It's Baneslayer Angel before that card existed. So obviously, if anyone's ever played against Baneslayer Angel in Limited, they didn't win. So I would highly recommend doing that. Let's see. Is there any other fixing I missed?
Kaleidostone.
Yeah, you can play that card. That's fine. Exploding Borders is another really stupid card that helps fix ramp at the same time and deal a ton of damage.
You've got Mana Cyclix?
So, Mana Cyclix is a card you usually don't want to play, but if you have powerful enough cards, Mana Cyclix can get past the mana disadvantage that it produces for you to want to play it. I've played plenty of Mana Cyclixes in my day, and people are like, why would you play that? Oh, there's also the best one, of course, we forgot, Rupture Spire. That card's absurd.
And Noble Hierarch.
That's very smart to open up. And then there's also Unstable Frontier, which is a little bit clunkier, but it does also help your domain because it turns things into basic lands of your choice. So there is definitely a huge increase in the fixing.
There's also
two.
There's also Path to Exile. That can fix you or your opponent.
You also want to take into account that while I'm mentioning all these payoffs for five color and I'm saying you pretty much should, that's sort of your goal. If everyone's trying to do that, it's not going to work out. And if you're within a shard and just getting a bunch of good things within your shard, cool, stick with it, because there are a bunch of shard payoffs continuing into Conflux as well. But you kind of want to do it with Conflux, because once you get to Alara Reborn, no, not really going to happen anymore.
Why is that, Neil? What happens once we get to Alara Reborn?
So Alara Reborn basically takes this nice kind of like mid-range format where everyone's finally fixing their mana and having a good time, and throws ridiculous overpowered blades into the mix. Ben, do you remember the blades?
Oh yeah, those cards are messed up. Like, oh man, they're just so unbeatable. One of them is like a 3/2 lifelink first strike, or maybe they only have one keyword ability. I don't quite remember. One of them is just a 3/2 flyer for 2. Like,
yeah,
that's just unreasonable.
So the thing with this set is that every single card in it is multicolor, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Which means they're all incredibly powerful. Like, 4/4 for 4 is, like, on the lower end of powerful card in that set.
Wow, yeah, all these cards are just brokes McGokes.
Very, very powerful.
Esper Blade was the one that was 3/2 flyer, right?
Yeah, Esper Blade is just really, really dumb. You need one other multicolor card, essentially, permanent to turn that on. The easiest way to do is with the border posts. Yeah, exactly. The border posts in the format can really help accelerate there. And the border posts also help fix your mana, so if you happen to be in like 4 or 5 color, it can still work. But the format is definitely accelerated with the last pack because of those blades, and because there's just so many powerful gold cards. And the gold cards are within these 2-color pairs much, much more. So Tristan, you were asking earlier if there were any basically 2-color pair decks that you could draft. I would say the answer is definitely no in the first 2 sets, but once you add in Alara Reborn, if you can get away with drafting just blue and white, let's say, in the first 2 packs, you get insanely rewarded in the last pack, because everyone else is trying to build up their mana bases and they have to spend all their picks on fixing. Meanwhile, you just get a very, very streamlined, aggressive strategy with all-stars such as Ethercast Knight, which is a 1/3 exalted creature for 2, which is just super pushed, either Sworn Shield Mage, which prevents all damage to all artifact creatures this turn when it comes into play.
It has Flash, too.
Yeah, it's busted.
That card's messed up.
Glass Dust Kolk at common. So, and a lot of the white-blue cards are all artifacts still, of course, from the first 2 packs. So you're going to have like these unblockable threats with Exalted and Flying.
And you can still play like Banshear Blade.
Yeah, exactly. You can play Banshear Blade and Esper Blade, because the Esper Blade you just play blue-white.
Yeah, wow, that's insane.
And then also there's the color hosers, I think, in each color pair. Where are they? I thought they were in the set.
I don't see them. But I'm maybe not looking too hard. How about this card, Behemoth Sledge? Is that card warping?
Yeah, Behemoth Sledge is one of the dumbest cards in the set, actually. So, glad you brought that up. Super, super good. And basically, you don't want to pass that card if you don't have to. It's basically just Loxodon Warhammer, but an uncommon. And if you've ever played against Loxodon Warhammer, that card is really, really filthy. Also, there is some hybrid mana, which also makes the 2-color plan work nicely. Like, there's Messenger Falcons, which is 2 generic mana, a green-blue hybrid, and then white for a flying 2/2 that comes to play, you draw a card. So 4 mana, 2/2 flying draw a card in either green-white or blue-white. So you get some nice flexibility when you're in any of those 2-color pairs to just take up some of those hybrid cards. And every single 2-color pair has access to 2 of the blades. And while some of the blades are more ridiculous than others, like the Banshear Blade has first strike, as that's really, really good. Obviously the flying one's the best, but even like the Naya one, it still has Hexproof, but it's just a 2 mana 3/2, so you can't really go wrong. I think the card I was thinking of was actually in Conflux, and the reason I didn't mention it before was because it was pretty bad in Conflux. So let me bring that back up. Let's see. Sorry.
I think one of the biggest challenges in Alara Reborn is figuring out if you can cast the spell, because there's a bunch of cards that cost like a color of mana and then a hybrid mana, or they just have really weird casting costs. Like all the Sure Blades have weird casting costs.
Yeah,
And, like, there's that 3-1 flying haste card for 4 that...
Well, the trick there is you always just need allied color pairs, right? That's...
If that's a trick, then okay. But I was not aware of any such trick.
Oh, yeah. Looks like it. Looks like it's always...
The Grixis Grimblade you can cast for black-red or blue-black, for example. But you can't cast it for blue-red.
Right. Esper Stormblade is castable by blue and either of its allied colors.
Yeah. So it's just always allied color pairs.
That's a neat trick. Yeah.
And it looks really, really funky. But there might be an exception, but not any off the top of my head. So the card I was thinking of is from Conflux. It's called Vedalken Outlander. It's a white and a blue for a 2/2 artifact creature with protection from red. And that's a cycle in Conflux where it's allied color pair creature with protection from the enemy color. And those cards are okay, actually, in Conflux, but not necessarily insane because they're all kind of a little bit aggressive. The only advantages they really have is that protection is really nice versus 5-color threats, but not every single person's going to be doing that. Though, obviously, protection in multicolor format has a lot higher implications than it would be otherwise, so they're still playable. But once you're down to those 2-color pairs, you can start to take things like that Vedalken Outlander and Esper Cormorant, which is just a white, blue, and 2/3/3 flyer artifact creature, much higher at common to just sort of keep that aggro strategy. And I think any of the 2-color pairs works reasonably well as long as they're open enough. The problem is that you're really limited in what you can take packs 1 and 2, and most limited by pack 1. But I think it might work out okay for you in these flashback drafts because people aren't really planning for the full set block experience. They're just drafting what's in front of them. So if you know what's coming in the next couple sets, you can kind of take fewer tricolor cards in the first pack if you can help avoid it. Obviously, you're still going to take the busted uncommons that you see, but then you can pivot away from that and maybe just build a lean aggro deck because everyone's still going to be kind of just dirtling, and now you can actually punish it, which is kind of cool. Yeah, that's kind of my assessment of the format, I think.
How about this card, Soulquake?
That card's really bad.
Okay, but have you seen the art? There's a tree that's just flying through the air.
It is. The art is super sweet.
There's a guy that's just, like, so amazed by this that he's blown backwards. He's just looking at this tree that's flying through the air. Everybody, look this up on your Gatherer. The card's Soulquake. There's just this tree that's just taking a journey through the sky. It's really something special.
What about Soulquake's cousin, Magmaquake?
Is that card in the format as well? What does that do? Or is that in a different format?
Magmaquake costs X and a Jund, and it deals X damage to target player and each creature he or she controls.
Oh, nice. That sounds pretty good.
As I want to go through, I guess... Since I did that for the first set, and I sorted it for Conflux, I'm just going to go through Alara Reborn and point out a few notable cards that you want to be aware of, and also a few cards that are, like, I think, kind of traps. So the first one that I have is Vectus Dominator. It's 1W and a black for an 0/2 artifact creature. You can tap it and tap target creature unless its controller pays 2 is its ability. This card's pretty bad. And it looks kind of good because it's a tapper that costs no mana. But giving your opponent the option to just pay 2 life, oftentimes they'll just do that 2 or 3 times and just whack you with a 5-power creature and you'll die and you'll be like, but I had this creature, and you'll realize your Vectus Dominator did nothing. So that card's pretty bad. I think Brainbite is an okay sideboard card while I'm going through. Let's see. Funeral is a trap. Yeah.
How about Nulltread Gargantuan?
Which one's that?
It's 1G and a blue for a 5/6, but when it comes into play, you have to put a creature you control on top of its owner's library.
I think that card's pretty bad.
Combos with the Homunculus Maker.
It's nice if you happen to have like some Elvish Visioners and things, you can play that card, but you need to make sure that you're doing something kind of broken with it, because if you just put that in a normal deck, it's probably not going to end well for you.
Okay.
Bituminous Blast, you basically should never pass. Let's see, what else stands out here?
How about these Sojourners, like Naya Sojourners?
I think all those cards are reasonable, but not really very good, I would say. The Jund Sojourners is reasonable because it can zap things, and it can trade for a lot of stuff. You can play those in your, like, within your colors, but I just wouldn't get excited about them. Oh, Colossal Might is a giant beating. It's just red and a green for an instant. Target creature gets +4/+2 and trample until end of turn. So you just cast this and you trample over something your opponent takes like 10. So that card is insane.
How about Mask of Riddles? This is a blue and a black for an equipment. It gives your creature fear, and when it deals combat damage to a player, you can draw a card, and it costs 2 to equip.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think almost all the equipment is much better than it looks. I think that card is quite good. It's a little bit slow, but as long as you control the game, it's pretty nice. If you look at Mage Slayer, which costs 1, a red, and a green, and equip 3, it has whenever equipped creature attacks, it deals damage equal to its power to defending player. This is a nice, like, breaker on a stalled board. You just play this, and your opponent just has to trade, but in the meantime, they're taking, you know, 4 or 5 damage, hopefully, from your big creature. So I think almost all the equipment is playable. Let's see. I think Vithian Renegades is awesome because it's a red and a green for a 3/2 when it comes to play destroy target artifact. It sounds like it would only really be good versus Esper, but everyone's playing these border posts with pack 3, so almost everyone's going to have a target for you to just stone rain your opponent back into the Stone Age. And you have it's a relatively high pick that you might not think so otherwise. Let's see, the last couple cards. I'm just kind of looking through. I think that's pretty much it. Dragon Appeasement's unplayable. Don't play this card.
It looks pretty unplayable.
It's this like nice sweet combo card that if you have a ton of Devour, it seems like it might work, but just don't try and do that. It's not going to work out well for you. And
how about Wall of Denial? Is this card great?
It's so good.
That card was good in Standard.
And that's about all I have to say about that. I mean, a bunch of the other cards just look how good they are. I think Thopter Foundry is pretty bad. That's a constructed playable. Don't play it in draft, really. You can play it if... It's generally going to be wrong to play it, let's put it that way. So.
Wonderful. Okay, so that, I guess, is all three of the formats here. Which of these three is your favorite format, Neil?
I think Shard's Conflux. I think it offers the most variety. You can draft just your Shard. You can draft 5-color Domain. The games are reasonably fast, but there's less, like, someone just gets mana screwed, but Alara Reborn is just, like, too crazy. I think just Alara Reborn is my least favorite, so I think I would have to say Shard's Conflux and Triple Shards, then the full block.
Huh. How about you, Ben? Have you played enough of these to have an idea of which ones you'd prefer?
I just the whole block, the only thing I can remember is getting mana screwed and dying. I really, really did not enjoy Shard's block.
Wonderful. So, if you enjoy your opponents getting mana screwed and dying, Shards of Valar might be the block for you, as long as you're willing to get mana screwed and die a little bit along the way.
Cool. They just play Woolly Thopter on turn 3, and you're like, this is stupid. All I have is Plains Swamp.
Obviously, it's stupid, but it's kind of great.
You should have been smart enough to draft Woolly Thopter, you dummy.
Dude, a friend of the podcast and roommate of Tristan, Sam D. Sherman, he always loves to talk about how he infamously at a PTQ top 8 kept a hand of Mountain, Mountain, Forest, Forest, Plains, Plains, Woolly Thopter, and just won easily. He just cast like no other spells. But he's just like, here's a 5/4. And his opponent's like, yeah, I can't beat that. So that's pretty nice.
Delightful. All right. Let's see. I guess that concludes the substantive portion of this episode. Unless we have anything that we've forgotten to mention, which I can't think of any.
Neil, no, just anything? A quick shout out to Magic 2010 that comes right after it. I don't really want to spend any time on it ever, but that's kind of a nice one just because it's the first core set, but it's honestly not a very good core set. They were trying, which is nice. But if you want to sack out and draft Baneslayer Angel, then you could draft that set. But by then we'll have Eldritch Moon, so just do yourself a favor and just draft Eldritch Moon.
Yeah, they've actually timed this pretty well that we're going to have...
exactly.
Oh, no, because, wait, don't flashback ones go down for like 2 weeks after the new set comes out?
Oh, yeah, you're right. But
maybe it'll be M10 and then Eldritch Moon will launch on Modo? I don't know.
It'll be... Eldritch Moon will be out for like 2 weeks and then they'll put M10, but then you'll still just draft Eldritch Moon, so it's fine.
Yeah, that'll be great.
And there's also Vintage Cube coming up in a couple weeks, so...
Wonderful, yeah. Our analysis of that is to force storm every time.
Oh, yes.
That, if you do anything other than that, you know, you're not really a human. You're not really living.
God, I feel so bad for my Pro Tour testing team because I'm not going to be able to test at all because I'm just going to be playing the Vintage Cube.
Wow, you shouldn't have said that with Neil around. He's on your testing team.
He's not qualified.
That's true. Oh, no.
I'm just going to be helping them test, and then Ben's going to be cubing.
Oh, no. I forgot that you weren't cued.
It's okay, buddy.
I'm so sorry.
Well, it's not really a big deal.
That's okay.
Everyone's having to deal with these passport issues and stuff, and I'm just, like, at home, just enjoying myself.
So. Yeah, I was seeing all these issues, and I was like, at least Neil, you know, dodged all these visa things.
If there's one to skip, it sounds like this one actually was okay.
Yeah, very smart.
It sounds like everything's going to be fine, and it just sounded a lot worse than it actually is, but
hopefully
I get allowed in the country.
It's Australia. They're not going to not let you into the country. I mean, like, is that something they would really do? I don't think so.
Maybe. Who knows?
Maybe. Anyways, Ben, would you like to tell the conclusionary story for our week's
festivities? Yeah, sure. So on this podcast, you know, we get a good laugh out of our judge stories. But today I wanted to just take a little bit of time to talk about something that happened in Pittsburgh where I saw a judge just be really great and really awesome. And I just wanted to publicly laud him for his great judging. Unfortunately, I have forgotten his name, so... I'm not
wonderful.
Be able to
that's
give him...
that's the best way to publicly laud somebody is to just not mention their name.
I told the judge manager at Pittsburgh, so you know, at least he got recognized by a person who actually has power over him in some way, probably, rather than just to the however many podcast listeners we have. But you know, so
that's all seven of you.
So what this guy did is so I was just watching a match in the feature match area because, I mean, I dropped out of the tournament very quickly. I was watching my good friend Scott Lipp play a Bant company mirror match. And this judge, you know, he was on point about his slow play cautions. You know, when both players were taking a while to make a decision, he was all about that. I need you to make a play. And that is something I do not see nearly enough judges do. So this guy, so that was great. But then also at the end of the game, this judge like told my friend Scott that like the way he was shuffling like wasn't really he should like gave him some tips on how to shuffle better, because apparently Scott, the way he was shuffling wasn't changing the top card, and then he would do a few mashes, so the top card would change, but the initial shuffling, like, the top card wasn't changing. So the judge was like, hey, you know, I don't know if you noticed this, but your shuffling is, like, not really sufficiently randomizing, so you really need to do a better job of that in the future. And that is also just great, you know, like, my friend was like, oh, yeah, definitely, thanks a lot for telling me. I don't want to get, like, penalized for this in the future or anything. So, yeah, like, just judges who, the way he gave that feedback to my friend, because my friend had just lost, actually, and maybe wasn't in the best mindset, but this judge was like super, his bedside manner was just great. He conveyed the information just in a really calm and teaching sort of way. And I just, you know, great judge. I'm really happy that, as much as I like to make fun of judges that I don't think are particularly great, I'm really happy when I see a judge, who I think is just doing a really good job. And I think that deserves to be talked about. So, yeah.
Great, that's wonderful. Shout out to unnamed Judge Hero.
Yeah,
Judge Hero.
You're welcome for the public
Look,
support.
His manager knows, and I told him to his face that he was great also. So if he happens to listen to this podcast, he'll know that I think he's great. I just don't remember his name. So.
With that, it's been all the allied strategies we have time for this week. But don't worry, coming right at you with more allied strategies next week.
Stick to what you know, I think.
Yeah.
All right, we'll run it back. I didn't have the thing up.
Did you know that Allied Strategies is a domain card?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did. Because of that one Relevant. Time that you gave me
this,
an Allied
Strategies
card.
This is why I wrote
card.
It down a long time ago, whoa, and whoa, I didn't whoa. Even write it.
That time that I attempted to give you an Allied Strategies, but you rudely refused.
Neil, do you still have the end thing like written down so that you can
I did, but I deleted it, and then I realized I kind of beat it, so...
Are you going to rewrite it?
Yeah, I'm working on that right now.
Okay. Let me know when you're finished.
Don't you just say something like, and join us next week for another episode of Allied Strategies.